session number 24611, Real Fall.
Mr. Campbell, Real 4. We're talking about when you'd moved to with the 3rd Battalion Scots Guards, equipped with Churchill tanks. You'd moved to Swanage. Well, you'd left the tanks behind, but you'd gone to Swanage on D-Day, 6th of June.
Yeah. We were really down there until the invasion boys got a foothold, and then we moved back to Bovington again. But it was a case of just moving down until they had that foothold, and we knew that that was okay, and we went back to Bovington.
And what happened next then?
Well, just the usual, put it bluntly, hang around Bovington, you know, doing maintenance on the tank and that, and just practicing.
What sort of maintenance? A lot of units had a sort of schedule of maintenance, you know, daily tasks, weekly tasks, tasks, monthly tasks. Did you have that
No, we just the. If we were out and came back, cleaning the mud off the bogies on the tracks and made sure everything was greased up, etc. In the winter time, it was pretty bad because you used to cover your tank with a tarpaulin and it was tied down, and to try and get the knots out, your fingers were sore trying to get the knots out because they were all frozen. And just things like that, keeping the tank worthy and connect.
You wouldn't be expected to change the tracks if a track broke or anything like that, would you?
No, the Remy boys, you used to do that. We could do it because it was just a pin, but the tracks were so heavy you just couldn't lift them.
So how long were you at Bovington there then?
Oh.
Roughly, you know.
Well, I didn't go abroad until I think it was February of 45.
Now, did it bother you that you were being left out of action, or how did you feel?
Well, I wanted to go across, and yet something inside me said, no, stay in this country. And yet, once I was picked out, it was a Sunday morning, they paraded us at Bovington, and they just shouted out your number and your name.
Now,
and you went. That was it.
So what had happened to the rest of the battalion?
Well, they stayed there. Some of the battalion were abroad by this time. The older
Who'd they gone to join? Would the battalion being used as a reserve battalion?
Well, as far as I know, before I went abroad, and when I went abroad it happened, what they were doing was, they were a support battalion. They captured Munster, I know that, I wasn't there, but they captured Munster.
The 3rd Battalion then?
The 3rd Battalion.
So how come you hadn't gone out with them when the rest of them had gone? That's what I'm trying to...
They didn't send all the men out. These men were fully trained. We were trained, but we were still rookies in the art of fighting as a battalion. And it was when they started getting casualties that we were more or less reserves, and we went out then.
So would some men be sent out to other units, or would they all go to the 3rd Battalion, Scots Guards?
No, no. There was the Guards Brigade, and there was the Guards Division, which were two different lots, both armoured. And what we used to do was, you hit Jerry there, then you hit Jerry there, and he didn't know whether we were a division or if we were only a brigade. Because they had tanks, we both had tanks.
So you could be drafted to either the brigade or the division, or would you be drafted to the 3rd Battalion?
The 3rd Battalion.
And they were in the brigade, were they, or the division?
They were the brigade.
Okay, so what happened now? In February, you'd finished your training.
Finished your training and more or less just kept practicing at the Bovington until the Sunday came along and we were put on parade.
Were you given embarkation leave?
Yes, sir.
What do you remember of that?
Well, I remember going home. I got the embarkation leave before we were told where we were going to. And I came home and I told my mother that I was home on embarkation leave. I said, now, I used to phone home every week. If I say I'm going to see Jimmy, because you have to be very careful on the phone, careless talk cough slice, as they said, you'll know I'm going to Germany. If I say that I'm going to visit Barbara, it means I'm going to Burma. Have you got that? Yes, son. So I went back after the end of my 7 days, and then on the Sunday I was picked out to go to Germany. So at night time I went to the phone, dialed home, my mother answered the phone, it's me. I says, tomorrow I'm going to see Jimmy. And there was deathly silence. But Jimmy's in Germany. I said, shush! She was going to see Jimmy's in Germany. I said, shush! then I heard a over the phone. I said, now I'm all right. I said, don't worry yourself. I said, I'll be all right. I said, I'll let you know as soon as I can get a card. I'll send it back home to you.
Now, what preparations were made for sending you out? You went out with a draft, obviously, or did you go on your own?
No, we just went as a draft. We just went.
Any preparations? Took us
none, whatever.
What do you remember the journey out?
Not very much, to be honest with you. I remember landing there. It was just after Munster. And they put us, it was during the night, they put us into this barn. And outside this barn, there was, I think they were 5.5 artillery, and they were blasting holy hell out of the Germans. But don't ask me where it was. We hadn't a clue where we were. And we did a chase up, because they couldn't catch a battalion. It was darting all over the place. And we were more or less trying to catch up with them. When we did catch up with them, I was put on this tank, given this tank.
Now, tell us about the tank and what you can remember of the crew. I know you don't remember the
name. Can't remember the name. John Culbertson was one of them.
John?
Culbertson. But I can't remember the other boy. Roy was another boy. He came from Glasgow. But I can't remember the other ones.
Do you remember which squadron you were in?
Pardon?
Do you remember which squadron or company you were in?
I was in right flank.
Oh, that's how they did it, right flank.
Right flank and the S flank, S company, no. I was in right flank at the time when I first got there. The tank had a 6-pounder gun on it.
And you were the operator driver?
Uh-huh.
How did you get on with the crew when you first met them?
Well, it was a case of you had to get on because you ate together, you slept together, you had on the back of your Churchill tank, you had a tin box on the back of the turret, and you were each issued with 2 blankets, and they were kept in that trunk, metal trunk. At night time, we were lucky if you were in a village or even a town, and there were some houses which were undamaged. There was always a dirty dive to get into the bedroom, to get into the beds. I've seen 4 of us sleeping in the one bed. But normally, if you were outside in the country, you had your tarpaulin, which you put, that's your tank, and you put it at an angle and made a tent out of it. And then put, well, as I said, there was 5 of a crew in the Churchill tank, each with 2 blankets. So you put 5 blankets on the ground, all got into bed, and there was 5 blankets on top of 5 of you, and you slept there. You were all close together for heat in the winter time, and you slept there like that, on the ground. The only thing you could do.
You'd never sleep under it or in it?
No, at the side of it. at the side of it.
And can you describe the tank? I mean, you've done a bit about the tank in training, but what I mean is about the adaptions that were made to the tank in action. Because you mentioned sandbags, but there may have been other things.
Well,
tell us what changes were made to the tank.
In the front, some of the tanks, not everyone, but some of the tanks had the spare tracks put onto the front of the tank, which gives them more protection.
Did yours?
We didn't have that. We just had the sandbags in the middle. That was all we had.
What about the sandbags? Where were they put? How were they put in there?
They're just down on the... Well, the bottom of your tank is round. And they were just down, of course. But standing on them, the sand was just bone hard. There was hardly any sandbag left. All the canvas was all worn away. It was just sand. It would come in handy, see if the tank caught fire. Although, if it caught fire, it was a case of the... to let the, depending upon where it was on fire, to let the driver and co-driver out if they couldn't get out the top because of the Germans' fire, then you had to turn the turret and it left a gap with a door in the side of the tank where they could escape through out the side of the tank. And that's what you used to have to do. But the sand was there just for handy's sake. If you went across a mine or anything, that the sand was there, which gives you more protection. That was about
what was it like inside the church when it was moving along? Can you just give us a sort
very,
of...
Very, very noisy, except that you travelled with your helmet on, your earphones on, to stop the noise. You're like this the whole time.
You're being bumped about.
Mm-hmm. You had seats. You could sit on a seat. Not that it was padded, but at least you were sitting there. But it was just because you were bumping all over the place. And you could hear the tracks, even with the earphones, you could hear the tracks going turning. And that. Invariably, if you weren't near any front line or anything, the commander of the tank and myself, we used to stand with half our bodies out of the turret for fresh air. And the driver and the co-driver, they used to have their hatch open as well. But the poor gunner, he had to sit there. And what the commander of the tank used to give signals to the gunner with his feet. He'd say, tap him with his feet, fire. And he used to kick him. Told him to fire. And did little things like that. But you all worked as a unit. The five of you. You ate, you cooked meals on the back of your tank and things like that.
Now what? Tell us about the food you were issued with in Germany.
Well, it was mostly all the rations, hard rations that you ate, except if you could pick up, I'd have to go abroad again, if you came across a farmhouse, you used to jump off the tank and going to the farmhouse and have the air for English soldat. And they used to just stand looking at you. So you used to go to the chicken sheds and help yourself to the eggs and go back to the tank with your tin hat full of eggs and used to fry them up on the tank that we had. The exhaust was about a foot wide and it went right across the back of the tank and it used to go red hot, the exhaust. And you could fry your food up in that. So that's where you still live on eggs most of the time.
What about the official rations you got?
Well, as I said, it was hardtack and that. We relied...
What do you mean by hardtack?
Well, biscuits and things like that. Just biscuits and tea. That's what you lived on. And that's why you scrounged most of your stuff to give yourself a variety. I used to get OXO sent from home, and there was one night it was very, very cold, snow was thick on the ground, and we had stopped and we had rented the tent, as we called it, got our blankets on the ground, and we're all shivering with cold, and the sergeant says, oh, he says, no coughing or nothing, he says, I've got some OXO if you want it. Oh yeah. So pulled this small tin with sand, pour some petrol in it, set a light to it, and put on this pot that we had, got water, put the oxos in, and each had a cup of oxo. And he says, bless your mother, Dave, he says, tell her to send more, that was lovely, because it was so warm, you know. But little things like that that made your day, really. But my mother used to send quite a lot. A lot of the lads had the parcels sent from home. Their mother's baking a cake and sending that, and they used to share it out. But give yourself a variety. You used to have tins of bully beef, tins of beans, for instance. So you made bully beef and beans. That was more or less what you lived on.
What do you remember of the actual, well, action? You joined them just after Munster. What do you remember of what were you doing?
Well, as I say, I remember, I think it was the first dead German I ever saw was being picked out of the River Meuse. And I always remember he was all bloated, and there was a gunshot right through his head. There was a couple of British soldiers, I don't know who they were pulling him out by a rope.
How did it affect you? I remember that.
And I thought to myself, "Ew, that's horrible." I thought, am I supposed to do that? Now, I was once asked by my daughter, Daddy, did you ever kill a German? I said, well, I'll put it like this, Lorraine. I said, when you're in the tank and you're doing guns, I says, all you see is your shell bursts. I says, no doubt those Germans killed, but you never actually saw them being blasted. You saw the shell burst. If you hit a tank, you knew fine people were in the tank. If you hit a house, might have been people in the house, you don't know. So I assume they were killed, but you didn't actually see them. I never shot anyone with a rifle or a revolver. We were armed with revolvers. I've got two photographs actually taken. We didn't have a camera until the end of the war, and one of the officers produced a camera. It was a German one, he must have taken it from someplace.
You just had revolvers, you didn't have stands?
No, we didn't have stands, we had revolvers.
Which ones?
The Wembley.
Had you had any training on them?
On the revolver. Between you and I couldn't hit a barn door with them. But what they were really for was we had flaps on the tank that you could open, small flaps like letterboxes. You could open them if a Jerry or an enemy, whoever it was, jumped on your tank. You just put your revolver through it and shot them. Although that never applied to me. I mean, I didn't have any, but that's what they were for. You couldn't take a rifle or anything into a tank because you're jumping in and out of a turret. A rifle was useless. So you had your revolver and it was strapped like a cowboy round your thigh, with a lanyard round your neck.
What about extra kit you carried on the tanks? Because some crews, I know on Shermans, used to carry the kitchen sink almost on the back of the tank. No, did you carry any extra supplies or food or kit on the back of the...
We just had what the boys were sent, and we had a frying pan and a kettle thing which we used as a teapot on the back of our thing. One or two of the lads had souvenirs. I had a souvenir of a dagger, an SS dagger, which disappeared from the tank because the only place we could keep it was in the tin at the back of the tank.
Now, what do you remember happening? Well, you know, you joined them, you saw this corpse, you know, but what's the first action you remember? You may not remember the action too well, I know, it's difficult.
I remember... I think it was a place called I may be wrong, and you've been sin or something like that. It was
just give us impressions of what happened and we'll, through they can, there they can look it up in
the
history.
It was just a case of the Jerry was just holding out in pockets by this time. He more or less gives themselves up to us. They were coming from the Russian front because they were scared of the Russians more than what they were of the Americans or the British. And they were coming in droves to us and giving themselves up. And there's pockets of resistance by the SS. But we just blasted them with the guns.
Well, give us an idea of what would happen in a typical action. You know, just a picture of what would happen.
I mean, I wasn't in any big action. The only thing was that you got word. You used to send your recce out, and they would either wireless back or come back and say, look, there's SS troops holding out in that village. So we used to get the tanks and more or less attack the village. And we took them from both sides so that they couldn't escape. Well, a lot of the lads, we didn't have much time for the SS with what they had been doing. So it was a case of blasting them to bits, and you couldn't care less because they were SS troops and they were really the bad side of Nazism, let's put it that way. So they used to blast them. The Wehrmacht, they weren't too bad. I mean, the Wehrmacht consisted of old people, and it was the youngsters that were really the worst. And they finished up by being called the werewolves. Even after the armistice, they were still fighting. And that has more or less quelled them down.
Did you encounter any German tanks?
Yes, we came across some Panzer tanks, which once more, I remember they dug in. Don't ask me where it was. I hadn't a clue where we were in Germany. They dug in. We got a hull down position, drew the fire while the other tanks went round the side and blasted them from the side. And that was the easiest way to get them, because they couldn't fire in both directions at once. So it was a case of you got a hull down position. All you saw was that of your turret. And of course the other boys are blasting away at them, and that was it. But
you said you once called up the RAF as well. Can you tell us that story?
That was in a place. Oh God, we were in this village. We were in this house anyway, and there was a well outside the house, and the tank was always put up against the house to break up the outline of the tank. And it was morning, we'd had a cup of tea and we'd fried some eggs, and we went out to get water from the well, the sergeant and I, to have a wash and a shave, because it was cold water. We used to heat it up, the tank was running light, you know. And the next second we heard this plane. I looked up here, it was an ME-109. And it came down firing machine guns at us. And we ran into the house. And I said to the sergeant, I says, we'll go out, I says, and I'll get the Bren gun, which was stacked in the boot. No, he says, get into the tank, he says, and wireless are off. So we got into the tank and they sent a Spitfire. And we were watching from the house, could see it. And we actually saw the boy getting shot down. And Spitty went after him. And next second there was smoke came from his tail and he crashed quite a bit away from us. So naturally there was a big cheer went up. So that was the cooperation that we had, you know, just wireless them and they came over and did their job.
You often mentioned tea. How would you brew up your tea, and how important was it to you?
Well, you could brew up the tea, very important. It was hot and sweet. We used to either, if we were out in the field, as I said, get a can, fill it with sand, pour some petrol on it, set it alight, then get some water, put your teapot on the top of it, and brew it that way. Or put your kettle on your exhaust at the back, which used to get red hot, and brew it up that way. So you had two alternatives.
And it was important.
Oh yes, we always liked our cup of tea, definitely.
What about washing and shaving?
It was a bit hard at times. Sometimes you, if you could, you got some water and boiled it again on the back of the tank, and they shaved that way in small basin.
You were expected to shave?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what about washing or bathing? I mean, were there any mobile baths or?
We used to come up periodically with the mobile bath, and you had the bath then.
What were they like, the mobile baths?
Just it's like a sort of caravan thing, just with the showers in it. We had about six to the shower, one shower. But the best shower we ever had when I was there was a place called Flushing. But anyway, we went into this place, and it was a mining place, and it was a mine. And that place opened our eyes. We were taken in by to have a bath. And we walked into this building. It was an open cast mine, I remember that. And the whole place was covered in tiles. Beautiful tiles. And there was showers, cubicles. And in the middle of this place was a round fountain with hot water coming out, jets right round it, and we couldn't go over it. It was spotless, so we all got stripped off, six to the shower, washed, came out. We found out that this fountain was for the boys that worked on the top of the mine. If they didn't need to wash their body, it was only their feet was dirty. They could sit on the edge and just put their feet into the fountain. And everything was all ready for them. But the tiles were immaculate, and it was spotlessly clean. And our miners here were washing in tubs in front of a fire. And that's what we couldn't get over, how advanced they were compared to what we were back home here.
Now, what about... So there was no problem with lice or anything like that? You didn't have any problem with that?
No.
How did you get on with the Germans? Can you talk about that a bit?
Well, we weren't allowed to speak to them first. There was non-fraternisation ban. When the war finished.
Before the war finished?
Even you're not allowed to speak to them. We went into... It was either Lüneburg or Lübeck. It was one of the two, can't remember. It was a town. We had been told to go up to Lüneburg Heath. I think it would be Lübeck. I may be wrong in saying that. Was either Lübeck or Leuven? I can't... Lüneburg. But we went in and we arrived there in the early hours of the morning, and we placed our tanks on the pavement, and the place was just covered in white sheets, white pillowcases. Every window had something white outside. And I was standing on the tank smoking when the window next to our tank, the curtains were pulled apart. And there was a wee boy, he must have been about 3-4 years old, was looking at me. And I took a bar of chocolate, which I had, and I pointed it to him. And the next second, his mother, I took it to be his mother, came, grabbed him and pulled him away from the window. They were dead frightened of us. We found out later, when they came out, they were walking up and they were walking away from us, but two or three of them were staring at the tanks. And they were poking the tank as they hurried past. We thought, what on earth are they doing? So we jumped off the tank, collared one of them, and asked him why he was poking the tank. They had been told by the propaganda that our tanks were made with cardboard, and they couldn't believe it, how they were made with steel. Didn't believe it.